Chef David Chang and the members of the Recipe Club sift through millions of search results to find the very best way to make the food you want to eat. Each week, they cook three recipes for the same dish, debate them, and ultimately declare the winning recipe. Check out Recipe Club on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Mint Mobile. If you've had it with your overpriced wireless plan with its insanely high monthly bill and unexpected overages, then listen to this. For a limited time, wireless plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. That's unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Wow, right? To get this new customer offer, just go to mintmobile.com/watch. That's mintmobile.com/watch. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for more details.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 200, or 2 billion, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one.
I need support staff to clear the room.
Stand up and walk now.
Hello and welcome to The Watch. My name is Chris Ryan. I am an editor at TheRinger.com, and joining me on the other line, he'd love to tell you about this timeshare opportunity in Madripoor. It's Andy Greenwald.
Madripoor is shot to the number one spot on my list of places I want to go post-pandemic.
Yeah, yeah.
No hesitation.
Andy, what a glorious Monday in the United States of America, and I'm so happy to be spending it with you talking about culture and life and where the two meet. How are you doing, man?
I'm great. I'm great. We're in the middle of spring break for my older child, which, you know, is just like MTV promised it would be.
How's Arizona treating you? Yeah,
it's nice. Arizona is lovely. It's a dry heat. I thought that I was not at my best during last week's tapings of The Grind with Eric Nies, but I think that I've turned it around so far today. In all seriousness, Chris, I did have I had an experience that I wanted to share with you.
I got some experiences I want to share with you. Hey, can we just say before we get too far into it, happy birthday to Kaya. It's her birthday tomorrow.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow. So
she's almost aged out of having to work with us, I think.
I think she earned out quite some time ago. Happy birthday to Kaya. Incredible. Incredible. Even this close to her birthday, just continuing to shovel this nonsense for us. And we appreciate it so much. Speaking of nonsense, as I mentioned, it was spring break. And so we were in an outdoorsy setting here in Los Angeles County over the last few days. And there were horses nearby. Now, not a big horse guy.
You would think you would be, given the amount of time we've spent with the work of Larry McMurtry over the last 18 months.
Yes, which has, honestly, great point, because we used to sort of talk about horse stuff, like from with maybe some irony in our voice, some sarcasm, and that was during the Game of Thrones era. I think we learned to apologize for that, because the horse is a beautiful, majestic animal that can also, in a pinch, make a great dinner, as we learned in the Lonesome Dove books. But regardless, I also think I talked about back when the world was open and we could travel, how I was actually on a horse in Mexico like a year and a half ago, which was a very memorable experience for me, because I think people know that, I think I told the story, but like my younger daughter's really, really excited by horses, loves horses.
Do you want to spoil the upcoming season of Narcos, or is that okay?
It's actually the Luck reboot that I'm show running. People have been asking what I'm up to. I'm bringing Luck back. And fortunately, I've run out of it, as have those poor, delicious horses. No, so she really loves horses and wanted to go horseback riding. And we went horseback riding in Mexico, and the caballeros immediately sniffed out the weakest link in the party, me, and put me on the horse first. And I had to have this rictus grin of this is fine and great. I love this. Because you have to convince the children that
sure. And you also got to communicate confidence to the horse, right?
Yes, which did not work. But anyway, so fast forward. Here we are in a more rural setting here in Los Angeles. And again, my younger daughter's could I ride the horses? And my wife called around, and the people who answered were She's four? No, she can't ride a horse. So respect, as always, to the people of Mexico for having their priorities right, at least in terms of what my family needs. I don't know if the horses agree. But anyway, all I want to say is there were horses nearby, and they're beautiful, beautiful horses, beautiful animals. And we would walk by, and the horses would be very gentle and come over, but not to me. So I, you know, humble brag, as you know, I go running. And so I would go running, and the horses wouldn't even get up from chewing on the clover. Like, they don't care.
Yeah.
Seen it all, done it all, heard it all, no problem. But when my wife would walk by, they'd be like, we sense a common, beautiful creature in God's menagerie, you know, and like come over, and like she would pet their noses. Same thing for my daughters, but they seemed like much more oriented towards, I guess, the people who were excited to see them.
Sure.
I was more respectful distance. Anyway, all this is to say, we're leaving, and my family, the not me part of my family, decides they'd like to go say goodbye to these horses and bring them each an apple.
Okay.
Because horses love to eat apples and sugar cubes, from what I understand. So, apple. So we go over, and it's a delightful scene. As soon as my wife and children arrive, they horses amble over. Couldn't be more gentle and friendly. Each waits their turn while they each eat and really crunch a, no doubt, very expensive organic pink lady apple from our refrigerator. And it's a really nice moment. And then the horses are hanging around, and my children are like, can I pet its nose or whatever? And
there's no horse supervision from like the horse ownership, right?
No. These this is very loose.
Yeah. Okay.
This is very loose horse ownership. I kept thinking that Kicking Wolf, the horse thief extraordinaire from the Lonesome Dove novels, would have made quick work of this setup. Very low security. But anyway, the horses are just being very friendly. And I'm like, they probably think they're going to get more apples. So I'm like worried they might like start biting or something. I don't know. They're very gentle. But
okay. But
my wife's like, no, I think they just like me. They just really like me. And at that point, my older daughter says, are they boy horses or girl horses? And that's when I realized that the horses are not excited for more apples. They just seem to be extremely excited.
Are you serious?
I would say that, but not just one, both horses became visibly aroused to the point where I then had to remove my family.
This has got to be the weirdest anecdote you have ever opened a podcast with.
Well, I could have closed with it. It is the weirdest anecdote that ever happened to me. But I think the horses were just randy, and they thought the apples were like foreplay.
We're not living in a Greek mythology tale, though. I mean,
maybe they're centaurs. I don't know. But is this a thing that happens? Throw it out there for the horse people out there. Are apples aphrodisiacs for horses? Are
apples
build
like the Molly that Zemo was taking at the club in Madripoor?
Do we have to raise horse fences higher, just generally? Like, yeah. Is this all? Look, Chris, people tune in not for the anecdote specifically, but because we're not afraid to ask the tough questions.
No, I hear you, man. So I'll just paint you a little picture of what I did yesterday. Yesterday was just like actually an all-time sports day. So your boy got up, mm-hmm. got a bagel and some lox. And commenced with, I think, an honestly like 10-hour sports day.
Wow.
Watched Phillies sweep the Braves.
That was
watched
great.
The incredible national championship game between Arizona and Stanford, women's national basketball championship. Watched Jordan Spieth triumphantly return to the top of the golf world by winning the Texas Open.
Mm.
Watched a little bit of Angels White Sox. I was in heaven. There's a breeze blowing. My wife made a delicious potato soup from the Julian Tashin book. I'm loving life.
This is a hot potato soup?
Yeah.
It was an 80-degree day in LA yesterday.
You know what? It was okay.
It's amazing.
By the time we had it, it was cool. And I loved the soup was great. And I'm just feeling great. I'm feeling really good about life for a second.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I get myself into bed. I'm ready to go to bed.
Yeah.
And you know, I would imagine if we could look at it on a timeline, sometime around like 2:30, my dream started getting super weird.
Okay.
And there was something, and I don't know what this says about me, but I know that at one point I was conducting a job interview with the very controversial public intellectual Jordan Peterson, in which he was getting increasingly irate at my line of questioning. And then in real life, outside of my dream, the fucking planet shook.
Yeah.
And I was very disrupted. I was woken up. I was like, I feel like I was like nauseous for a second or something, or just like really disoriented. I was like, what the fuck is happening? We had like a little cluster of quakes last night.
We did.
And so it's really thrown me off, but my energy is back level again now that I see you.
Yeah, it's interesting because as you know from text messages I sent you, my current hottest take is that California is great. I think it's a great place to live. I think the weather is very, very good. I think it's beautiful outside and there are many places to go. That's my take.
Stephen A. Meteorology here.
And then you're right, like around 4 a.m. or whatever, Mama Cass California is just like, you sure about that?
Yeah.
Just a little. That's interesting that you were having weird dreams. I had a very weird dream as well, but I think it was post-quake.
And just to be clear, Jordan Peterson's not a guy that I give a lot of mind space to. So it was very strange. And it was also one of those things where you're like, this person probably doesn't look like who they are, but like in your mind, you're like, that's who they are.
I don't think you have anything to apologize for. It sounds like you were putting the screws to him.
I was holding him accountable.
You were like the Isaac Chotiner interview.
Yeah.
But of a public intellectual who you disagree with. That's fine.
Yeah,
that's all in the public sphere. My dream was, I was very excited to get tickets to
we're in our twilight if we're just telling each other our dreams.
I thought you should know, because I thought this was weird too. I had a dream. I've never had a dream about these people, but it was a Nirvana reunion concert where Grohl and Novoselic were, the way they are, old. But Kurt Cobain had, quote, recently been resurrected.
Well, it was Easter.
And today is his death anniversary, which is not something I knew or remembered. And
that's
it was a
weird
Nirvana concert. I've never dreamed about Kurt Cobain, never dreamed about Nirvana, but that happened. And then the second part of the dream, we saw our buddy Tim Simons, TV's Tim Simons, the Watch podcast.
I was in your dream?
No, well, he's our buddy, but he was in the dream.
Right. Okay.
And the matter of fact thing about him was that he was also a werewolf. And it was cool. It was just like everybody knows Tim's also a werewolf, so you guys just got to watch out.
Okay.
So here we are. And you know, I'm pretty into our new podcast schedule. I bet Kaya is too, at least before her birthday anyway, of Fridays, Top Chef, Mondays, some Falcon and Winter Soldier, but mostly Dream Talk and Aroused Horses.
I have another topic I'd like to discuss with you.
Okay.
The Iron Anniversary.
Hmm.
Which is something I just learned of today, but I thought it was an interesting conversation topic. So the Iron Anniversary is apparently the anniversary, the 10-year anniversary of the debut, the premiere of Game of Thrones. And HBO is celebrating this anniversary in an interesting way. So obviously a doc about the legacy and the making of and yada, yada. I think there's some other extras specific to the show. But it does seem like what HBO is doing to take advantage of this date is to kind of lean into the curatorial experience, like turning HBO Max into a curatorial tool for one of their legacy archive shows. Now, I didn't check before I got on the pod, so maybe I'll be proved wrong, but I don't believe they are currently doing this for any of their other sort of signature shows like Sopranos or The Wire. But they apparently are going to make a series of playlists, some spoiler-free, some if you are only looking for the most hysterically bloody, twisty episodes.
Right.
There's going to be a lot of like personalization for your Game of Thrones experience. They're also going to do a marathon of the entire run. But for one thing, I feel old because Game of Thrones started 10 years ago. For another, I thought this was noteworthy because so much of what they are kind of pushing forward in this announcement wasn't so much Game of Thrones, which I think is kind of feels like it never left and will be coming back next year, as we've discussed before or soon. But it is like this idea of a new way to watch Game of Thrones with our in-house streaming service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I think it's worth noting, you mentioned we're not seeing this for Sopranos or Mad Men Sopranos or The Wire or Dream On, is because the Game of Thrones is active. It's active IP. And yes, Sopranos, the movie, I think, is finally coming out. I think it's coming out to HBO Max because David Chase literally has become Al Pacino in Godfather 3. Like, he keeps trying to quit TV and he can't do it. But it's a no-brainer to celebrate the anniversary of such an important project and product for the company and for the brand, but also to do two things, to give it that little spark, that little jolt of life to remind people that it's an active ongoing concern and there's a way to stay connected and perhaps a new way to stay connected. Also a way to reorient people's brains so that HBO Max is the home of Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. not just HBO where the way you watched it 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So I think it makes a lot of sense. That said, I am also kind of interested, and we keep talking around the margins of this, but as these services become a little more entrenched and hopefully, you know, stabilize in terms of whatever their paid user base is or what they're seeking, very interested in the curatorial corners of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
because the thing is that we spent a lot of time last year talking, you know, proportionately about Criterion Channel. And one of the great aspects of that service, aside from its overwhelming contribution to society in terms of its cinema library, is your ability to kind of sort through by director, by country, and make your sort of watch list so that you never really are out of stuff to watch. And there's all these different ways to explore the service. And, you know, I was talking earlier on TV Concierge with Juliet about how Paramount Plus doesn't have like a watch list my queue function mm-hmm. yet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, essentially, I think there will be some services that are trying to basically keep you on that front page and keep you looking at their top 10, the newest ads popular on the service right now, and then a couple of curated fake genres like, well, rom-coms that happen in The Office, you know, kind of mm-hmm. things. And then there will be some that are like, we know we have this huge reservoir of stuff. Here's a bunch of different ways for you to like collect it all.
Yeah, absolutely. What's interesting to me about this is of all the services that we're talking about outside of Criterion, HBO Max is the one that makes the most sense to not just have, because of the depth of its library, but because of the depth of brand attachment people have to HBO, which might be a reason why they don't rush to this, because they are in this mushy space where they're trying to have it both ways still, as we've discussed, where there's HBO here, but there's also your Max content and it's all of it all mixed up together and you're actually undercharged because you get so much of it. I get that. So it might not be the moment to remind people that HBO as HBO was the crown jewel of broadcasting for many years, at least in terms of launching this prestige moment that we're all still living in the after effects of. But if and when they choose to do it, one of the Criterion, they're the one service that I think that could model another aspect of Criterion, which is when they have people on like these little segments, like My Adventures in Movie Going, like they had my buddy Alan Cumming, but they have
My Adventures in Westeros, yeah,
Megan Abbott or whatever. But they can have people say like, you know, these were my fundamental TV hours, or like this was my HBO. And I think it could be kind of interesting because the bench is so deep and the quality is so high, and there's a lot of different types of shows in different eras. So all of that is there, and it could very well be that's where we're headed. And if so, starting with it pegged to the most popular franchise, Game of Thrones, and pegged to an important anniversary makes the most sense. What's crazy is it's 10 years then. I mean, we didn't even mark this. Maybe we will, at least in the podcast, but 10 years since Grantland launched. Mm-hmm. And I remember very well kind of sort of transitioning to being the TV writer. I was just writing about pop culture stuff and being asked to like, oh, something big happened on this new show last night. You should write about that.
Yeah.
And so we weren't even, I mean, this is both, we were a little bit behind, or I was definitely behind in terms of watching Game of Thrones, but like, it's funny to think about sort of catching up to it. The first thing I wrote was about episode 9.
I think I caught up after the first season was done, or maybe midway through the first season. People were just like, you have to watch this. This is so good. And I was like, I don't know, dragons. And then, I mean, it's so weird. This is actually segues nicely into what I want to talk about. It's so weird now to go back to remember the way your brain worked, or the way, not even your brain, but like maybe what your preferences were back then. And be like, yeah, you know, like I'm sure it's good, but dragons aren't really my thing. Or, you know, this this kind of like hard fantasy isn't really my thing. And now you're just like, well, I mean, like, you know, here's the thing about Dunkin' Egg. You got to understand, you know what I mean? Like, I feel the same way about Marvel. You know what I mean? Like, in 2008, when Iron Man came out, I was solely interested in that personally because of Robert Downey Jr. You know what I mean? Like, the interest level I had in it was in the execution of it, not necessarily in whether or not they were doing justice to a beloved character and when they would bring in the Mandarin or something like that. And now, as we have kind of hit maximum Marvel at this point, So over the weekend, well, I mean, I know, but like we're living in it. If we haven't already hit it, we're heading there. So we had a Black Widow trailer, which I want to get to. We had candidly like a fucking dope Loki trailer. Like I'm not trying to sound like a Stan Lee stan here. That trailer is good as hell. And like has everything I kind of want from what these shows can be. And then another episode of Falcon and Winter Soldier with, I think, based on my anecdotal research, an uptick in the who is this character? Where is this going? I think I've solved it. I think it's this. I think it's that speculation that popped up around mid-season in WandaVision. So they have now on successive shows created not only a, hey, this is pretty fun, like I'm enjoying watching this every week, but then a secondary experience of time for me to find out who the power broker is. And time for me to like wonder, you know, like Van and Concepcion and a bunch of people were like basically talking to a lot of their Twitter followers this weekend, being like, well, who do you think it is? Is it this person, that person? I did not expect that to come from this show. I thought the show was going to be a lot more straightforward, a lot more bare knuckled, a lot more, this is an espionage show. So this seems like it's a playbook that they're going to run over and over again. I'm sure Loki is going to have tons of these kinds of mysteries just because of the timeline jumping and shifting and all the different aspects of the universe that they're going to introduce us to. We can talk about all these things specifically. I just wanted to take your temperature on whether or not you are like, you know what, honestly, this is a pretty good experience, or you know what, honestly, this is a bit much for me right now. And I, you know, I know that we like, I don't want to be cranky about it because like I'm actually a huge Falcon Winter Soldier fan. So, but I just wanted to take your temperature.
You mean in terms of all of it hitting at the same time? Like we're starting to
hitting
feel
at the same time and it kind of feeling like this is what TV is. Like there is not a ton of oxygen out there once you get past. And maybe that's also because there's not a ton of shows. We're waiting for Mayor of Easttown, but like there's not a ton of scripted stuff coming in and
it's
around
a great
it.
Question. I think that it, I don't really have an opinion because I'm still sort of figuring it out. We are, you know, you say that we're at maximum Marvel, but because we're only in the second show, we haven't yet reached a point that I think we might reach. I mean, if it were up to Kevin Feige and the people at Disney Plus, like that we never will never reach this. But I'm curious if we will reach a point where the shows are so plentiful, but also so diverse that it might one day be possible to not have to consume all of them with the same level of appetite. You know, to your point, Loki just looks like the kind of show I want to watch. It has the tone, it has the performances and the actors specifically. They put Boku juice boxes in the commercial. Mm-hmm. Like, do you remember that? That is like a Proustian lunchbox thing for kids who were, you know, grew up in the 80s and 90s. I'm very excited about that show. Falcon and Winter Soldier, I enjoy. Maybe it's the nature of the show itself. Maybe it's kind of diffuse because other people are saying, you know, it's clearly a six-part movie that they broke up kind of haphazardly. I'm not sure about that. My take on it is that it's doing a lot. It's doing a lot. And because it is broken up the way it's broken up, I'm not sure what it's the most interested in doing because I keep, you know, you chase one ball and then you chase another one and there are just a lot of balls in the air. And it's really almost critic proof at this moment because I'm not sure which is the show and which is misdirection. So I'm okay with it. I guess what I feel weary about is that expectation that everything fed down the chute is worthy of, or not worthy of, that's not fair, but demands the same level of passionate curiosity and engagement that I need to know all of it. And sometimes with something like the Power Broker, I mean, that is a very vague comic idea character that is being upcycled into the MCU and might prove to be more interesting there than it was in the comics, at least as far as I know or remember. To me, it doesn't matter yet. You know, because I don't watch TV, and many people do, but I personally don't watch TV as a series of puzzle boxes. I'm cool letting a week or two go without finding out. It doesn't really matter to me if they do the thing where Sharon Carter, and we'll come back to her in a moment, no doubt she is the power broker all along. Well, okay. Tell me more about Sharon Carter. That's fine. She's had a pretty chill pandemic blip year. You know what I mean?
Right.
Pretty interested in what she's managed to accomplish. But I think that's kind of my take on it. I know that what was so impressive about the MCU was the totality of it, that everybody had to experience everything, you know, and that was just, that is just, you know, candy to a multinational corporation beholden to shareholders. The bet is that you can then just change the tap and just keep it running and have even more flowing through it now through your streaming box. But I also do think that they are, because they're smart people, mindful of the fact that people have limited amount of free time and free energy, you know, and to devote to all this, one would think, especially as the world opens up again. And they are probably aiming towards a place where not everything is essential, even if sometimes it feels like it is.
I think that if there's any, like, and I guess with, I can't think of another way of putting this, Spidey sense going off about any of this stuff, it's that what we saw happen kind of in the movie theaters, which is a lot of these franchises essentially, I don't know, necessarily elbowing out the mid-tier drama or the studio film that was just like a one-off, well-made, you know, genre movie, whether it was like a thriller or a courtroom drama or whatever. I guess there's a little bit of like alarm or sensitivity to the idea that also happening on television, where even if Invincible, for instance, is good, Invincible is now like, is that like Terriers? Like, I don't know. Is like, is like another superhero show going to be the superhero show that you should be watching when you're not watching your superhero shows? Well, I guess that's true. And it's, that's totally cool. But like, it does seem to be a little bit of a market saturation. The thing you're saying about how you're watching this show and whether or not you feel compelled to do a deep dive or to like kind of do it like a secondary forensic investigation into like all the plot points. When I did when me and Fantasy did the Unstoppable rewatchables, I think it was me and Bill with Quentin Tarantino, and I did a bunch of like Chris Pine research back then, and he gave this interview. I think it was on this YouTube interview show called The Off Camera Show. And the
is that
guy,
Jordan Peterson's show?
No. And the guy asked him, Sam Jones asked him, how hard is it basically to play pretend when you're doing like a big budget action movie like Star Trek? And he's like, there are times, you know, when I went up to J.J. Abrams during Star Trek and I was just like, what the fuck is happening in this scene, man? Like, I don't even understand. And J.J. Abrams said to him, look, you're going to run through the door. You're going to say the line really fast. The camera's going to be coming at you at 50 miles per hour. The music's going to be blaring and all the audience is going to know is something is fucked up. And I think that is how I am appreciating Falcon and Winter Soldier. It has great tempo. They're moving through these scenes really well. The chemistry among the cast is pretty top notch. And that was on display, especially between Brule, Sebastian Stan, Anthony Mackie, and Emily Van Camp this episode. Wyatt Russell's dynamite. And yeah, do I really like think that the Carly Morgenthau Flag Smashers plotline is illustrating the you know economic disparity in this planet? No, but like it's not bothering me because they move fast. And I'm just like, I just know shit is fucked up.
There was big, big, big Atlanta hang energy between Brule and Mackie and Stan. I think that it's the kind of experience you can only have if you've just been apparently granted a lifetime pass to work. You know, they're just like, this is sweet. You know what I mean? And they just like each other. And I'm not mad at that. I enjoy that. I enjoy seeing good actors get paychecks and a chance to hang out. Okay, well, I have specific things to say about Falcon and Winter Soldier because I took a week off from it. But I do want to say broad strokes. A concern I will advance, not necessarily specific to the show, but to the Marvel project in general, is this. What I hoped for out of the TV shows is more time and more space and more ability to focus on the types of interesting, sometimes even radical ideas that can populate comic books, for which there really just isn't room in a 2-hour, you know, planet or nation state smashing spectacle on the big screen.
For sure. Yeah.
And there's without question that is happening, right? I mean, all of the ideas about grief or just the weirdness of the conceit of the first few episodes of WandaVision, that's there, you know, the specifically building a TV show out of this really kind of almost inside jokey idea of the time variance authority as created by the beloved Marvel editor and writer, Mark Gruenwald, like that's there in Loki. Like they are showing us that that is what these TV shows can do in ways that the movies couldn't. Falcon and Winter Soldier is almost of a too much type of a situation because if I had been on last week, I would have talked about the introduction of Isaiah Bradley character and you know, who is based on a really pretty incredible storyline that came out like 20 years ago. The Truth. Yeah. Red, White and Blue, The Truth. Written by Robert Morales and drawn by Kyle Baker, that put forth, you know, every so often, I've said this before on the podcast, there are just a couple, there are these undiscovered pockets that these characters are so worked over in decades of story, but there are a couple things, a couple doors never opened, a couple windows never cracked. And this is one of the big ones, which was the idea that if they were testing a potentially dangerous, potentially world-changing drug on American GIs, well, real-world history suggests they wouldn't test it on white GIs. You know, going back to the Tuskegee experiments, they would test it on potentially on black GIs. And that Steve Rogers was not the first Captain America, that there was another named Isaiah Bradley who had a more, to say the least, challenging life and reign. His grandson became a hero in his own right in the Young Avengers, et cetera, et cetera. I was really psyched and shocked that they went there in episode 2 of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And what I was saying before about like, which show are we even seeing? It's too early to say, like that is huge. And already, and you know, you credit all the people involved, but we have to credit Malcolm Spellman for this probably first and foremost. There are moments in the show that have not been in other Marvel shows or any other superhero shows. Even, you know, the moment when they're almost arrested, the moment when
in Baltimore,
in Baltimore, the moment when Sam Wilson is clowning on the kid for calling him Black Falcon or whatever, that just wouldn't be there, you know? And it's very interesting, and I think a good thing that it is there. But there's also, as you said, the Flag Smasher stuff. There's also the new Captain America stuff, which is tied to the racial stuff in a way that I'm excited to see if the show will continue going down that line. But it's also Madripoor and Zemo. I mean, there are all these huge ideas from the Captain America mythos being swirled around in here. And this early on, maybe it wouldn't be this way if it was actually a movie, but this early on in a series, I can't tell which one is the motivating one. You know what I mean? And so that my concern, trolling, I guess, to a degree, but I think it's more genuine than that, is I would be psyched if we could just stay there for a minute. Like, let's really think about what that means.
I almost wish this is like a 12 episode show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe it ultimately will be. Maybe they always planned for a second 6 episodes or whatever to tell the back half of the story. Maybe this is an ongoing, even though none of them are officially ongoing. We don't know. But so that's where I'm at with the show on a
macro level.
Yeah. No, yeah. On that level. In terms of like the moment to moment entertainment, look, it is very entertaining. I think that my experience watching the first episode and subsequent episodes was different because the first episode, I was like, I had a night to myself and I was like, I'm going to fire up a comic book show. And I was psyched in the same way that I'd be like, clear out space to go to the theater to see one of these movies.
Yeah.
Last night when I had to catch up and watch the third episode after a long drive, I was like, I'm not in the headspace for this and it's shouting at me. So that colored some of my watch, but that's me. But it's also the nature of, we have to watch it because not just for the podcast, but in general, I mean, I waited until Sunday. That's late by the life cycle of these programs these days.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Mint Mobile. If you've had it with your overpriced wireless plan with its insanely high monthly bill and unexpected overages, then listen to this. For a limited time, wireless plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. That's unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Wow, right? To get this new customer offer, just go to mintmobile.com/watch. That's mintmobile.com/watch. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for more details.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over 2 decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else. This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower what's next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I thought that this episode was really good with, I don't want to say having fun, but I think that it got back to some of the like best of the like the banter superheroes that we've seen from Marvel, where I think that we kind of deviated a little bit. Every one of these movies and shows has some of it, but I think because the stakes have gotten so much bigger and bigger and bigger. I mean, they were big in Ultron or whatever. Like, of course they've always been big, but part of why I liked Iron Man, you know, or part of why I liked, you know, Ragnarok is because they kind of foreground the comedy and have the action movie happening around it. Mm-hmm. I never looked at Zemo and was like, that guy has a lot of comic potential. This guy could be super funny. And I thought that they did it, especially that plane ride where they're talking about Marvin Gaye. They did it in a way that was like, I could kind of see this guy doing this. Like, this isn't like a complete total 180 from his character. But at the same time, like, one of the things that these TV shows seem to be trying to do is basically rewriting these characters a little bit and being like, well, what if we had like a ton more fun with somebody like Wanda, who has essentially been asked to like throw orange fireballs and speak in a muddy accent. You know what I mean? So I was really excited by that. And this was completely, this is all, you know, leading up to, I just want to go back to Madripoor, man. Like, I don't even know if they really went there. I was really hoping for it to be more of like Rob from Industry in Madripoor.
Sometimes, and this show is testing it more. I mean, when we talked about WandaVision, you know, our general critique was, this tested the limits, not of the hex within the show, but the limits of the kind of emotional storytelling that this show is capable of, you know? And I think it pushed the limits, but it ultimately, for me, wasn't as satisfying about where it ended up. This show is definitely pushing the limits of being a grown-up entertainment, for lack of a better word. You know, I mean, it wants to be an action movie.
Yeah, and so there's a couple of shits.
A lot of S mini bombs and a lot of violence. A great deal of death and
Sharon
stabbing.
Fuck some guys up. Derek Kolstad wrote this episode. He's the John Wick guy. He wrote the John Wick screenplay. And Nobody, the Bob Odenkirk movie that just came out.
Which character is it that like just sort of casually picks up like a trident and throws it through a dude in the shipping container yard and then it like cuts away? I'm like, okay. So it's pushing things in those directions. I think the thing that I... just to go back quickly to the thing that you were saying, like the best case scenario for Marvel Cinematic Universe is that it becomes like Marvel Comics, where if each time a new writer has a story to tell, the characters always have to sound like they've always been, but they are tweaked circumstantially in ways that are exciting and, you know, allow writers and artists to leave their mark on them. Okay, so Madripoor. Mm-hmm. I also feel both excited and a little bit cheated by it because I love... People know this. I love it as someone who loves Marvel history. I love it when they go to the weird corners. That's why I really like the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. I like it when they canonize things that are just maybe were bad ideas at the time or just sort of suspect ones. And Madripoor is this like lawless kind of like nation state of like fictionalized Macau. Is so good. It's just such like a rich, bizarre thing to have in your cinematic universe to play with. And I think that it's also fanboy bait or fan bait because it's very much connected to Wolverine.
Yes.
And Wolverine often would hang out there. His first solo series was when he was kind of retired there. I sent Chris last night one of my favorite covers ever. It's like Larry Hama's Wolverine, like number 8. And it's Wolverine in a tuxedo with the Gray Hulk when he was, that was his mindset. And they were like bouncers in Madripoor. The fact that for the purposes of this show, which is doing something very specific and using it in a very specific way, it kind of had that just generalized underground rave.
Sure.
Matrix 2 kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like, it was closer
to Matrix
2.
The people here have tattoos and shaved heads and machine guns. And we all look up when the record scratches on like the Deep House track from 2003 that's playing.
Yeah.
That's not as perverse as I wanted.
The word, like the drugs are like snake intestines, but nobody's doing like ketamine or molly, but like let's just pretend, you know.
Yes, I think your industry parable is great. I feel like Madripoor should just basically be like certain parts of London as written by
did
our
you
pals
notice
over
much
there?
Of a distinction between Hightown and Lowtown?
Great point. No,
they made a big spectacle about that on the bridge when they're about to drive into Madripoor. He's like, here's the thing, man. Hightown is like this. Lowtown is like that. And then they do a little bit of time in both. And they both seem basically the same, except for nicer lofts where Sharon's living.
If you want to nitpick, I mean, I was curious that Sharon Carter, who, you know, by her own admission, is a fugitive from her own country and has no safe harbor anywhere on earth. Yet she lives in a sparkling loft and seems to get her clothes exclusively from Assassin by Ann Taylor. Okay, you know, I'm fine with that. There is just
she wasn't like a big drinking, like face busting character before, was she?
I'll be honest, I bumped a little bit on that.
Okay, so she is now like Jason Bourne in Jason Bourne, where she's just like bare knuckle fighting and having like a long pull off of Buffalo Trace. But like, and killing a bunch of dudes in a shipyard.
But she also seems like she's had a pretty mellow time up to now. You know what I mean? Like she didn't really her appearance didn't seem to evince difficulty.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and I felt the same way about, by the way, no disrespect to Daniel Brühl, who is bringing life and giving me life in the show, but he doesn't necessarily look like he's been maltreated in the German prison. He does look like he personally took on the COVID-19 through the commissary food. You know what I mean? Like he definitely, like they called him and he was like, oh, do I have to do action? They were like, yeah. And he was like, 9. Like he just flew to Atlanta. Can I ask you before, I'm sorry. I know we have more to say about Madripoor, which I hope we do see more of, not just in the show, but in the Marvel Cinematic Universe going forward. It is evidence of just like how rich and deep this world is that they could just toss off a place that could be its own show.
Sure.
And even more so and more naturally and easily than Star Wars can.
Like, I don't like to ask for work, you know, but get at me about Madripoor Nights. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're handheld, gritty, maybe it centers on like a club promoter trying to make it work while the power broker is also peddling super serums.
Are we just pitching? Because what I would do is there's a Netflix show that I've mentioned before called Midnight Diner Stories. Like it's a Japanese show and it is so
crazy. No, there's not.
Yeah, there is. There's just a guy who runs a diner.
Midnight Diner Stories.
It's called Midnight Diner Tokyo Stories. It's on Netflix and it's about a place in Tokyo that's only open from like midnight to 6 a.m. And the master is there and he makes whatever people want when they come in. And then like someone will come in and she's like a famous TV screenwriter, but she's not writing her truth. And then like, but she wants a certain dish that reminds her of childhood, and then it is very chill.
Is this
programming.
Reality show or is this a
no? Oh, okay. It feels like it sometimes because of its commitment to not actually having stakes. But I kind of enjoy it, and I feel like Midnight Diner Madripoor Stories would be an upgrade. Okay, so what I wanted to ask you, Chris, because I know if anyone made it this deep into the podcast, they've already heard us confess our dreams. I wanted to ask you something about Baron Zemo when we meet him. And my question is, you are an upstanding guy. I don't see this in your future. But Chris, if you ever did run afoul of the law.
Sure.
You know what I mean? If Johnny Law ever caught up to you.
Yeah. Being too good at podcasting and they were like, you're under arrest.
Exactly. You read my mind. What kind of prison guy, Chris, are you?
I've talked about this a lot.
Oh, okay. So here are my questions. Here are the three choices I have. Maybe I don't have enough categories because you've seen more prison movies than I have. Are you get swole guy? Like, are you just pumping iron in your cell? You know, Okay. Are you help out in the library / become spiritual guy?
Probably not.
Push in the cart, you know, advising the young ones.
It depends on what kind. Okay, you can finish. What's the third option?
The third option is the Baron Zemo option is, are you just sit on your bunk and stare into the middle distance for days, months, possibly years until someone comes to bail you out?
I've said this before on other pods. My job would be fixer. My job would be the great uniter. I would move between groups. I would try to like make sure we kept the peace relatively.
That's a dangerous gig.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, it depends on the bit I'm doing, but like you have to make the most of your time. You know what I mean? Otherwise, you do the time. Don't let the time do you.
That's what's incredible, Chris. This is actually who you were in New York City between 1999 and 2008. Like, if there were people at a bar sitting at different booths, Chris would float between them.
I'd be like, you guys want to go to Madripoor?
You guys, I'm actually personally going to Madripoor. You're welcome to come along. Yeah, I
heard there's an open bar at the Madripoor record release party tonight.
See, my thing is, I saw this, maybe this is a reflection of where I'm at, but I was like, you mean I could be in a room with books for just like a while?
Yeah. I was kind of psyched. There's like a brief second when Bucky goes into that cell and it's like, Zemo's like, yeah, I've been reading. And Bucky's like, what are you reading? And then like the world is their oyster at that moment.
Know,
they obviously
pick
Machiavelli. But like, can you imagine if he was like Richard Ford's Independence Day?
It's like, I've been reading the Frank Bascom cycle. And I really have become nostalgic for a taste of New Jersey that I never knew. Did you know there were root beer restaurants, Bucky? And Bucky would be like, yeah, I fucking know. I'm 106 years old.
Yeah.
My blood is half vibranium, half root beer. Yeah, I mean, do you know, with the understanding, the umbrella that like, I just think we're enjoying this, like, and it is, and maybe it's better because there's not much to read into it. It's just, it's fun.
I really like this show a lot.
Do you know what they're doing? Like, what can you graph their goals?
Why are they going
to
these places?
To me?
No, this is, and I've seen a couple of other places point this out, but this is this style of storytelling to a T to some extent, where it's just like task and side quest oriented business, where you're just like, why do you guys have to do this?
And you're dressed that way. And
yeah,
okay.
Right. And I think that I can kind of watch the parallel lines of there's John Walker and he's kind of like, there are only certain things I'm allowed to do as Captain America. Right. So I'm going to let these guys go freelance the case, whatever the case is, I guess, trying to track down this missing batch of super soldier serums. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'm going to track them while they track that. So there's like this kind of cat and mouse thing going there. I honestly don't understand like why there needed to be the first you have to go talk to the fence who gets killed, and then you have to go talk to the doctor who gets killed, and then at the end we basically find out Sharon's either working for the CIA or is the power broker, right? Like she has like whatever is going on, she apparently has a personal assistant who drives like a nice car and is like, we've got an issue with these guys. And also obviously you can't really trust Zemo.
Yeah, listen, Chris, what about Zemo though? It's right there for us. You could never, never trust him. I wanted to, you mentioned John Walker. I didn't get to talk about that last week. Kind of, again, maybe represents all my points of view about the show. Because, mostly good. Let's start with the good, which is Wyatt Russell, fantastic. Always. I mean, he should be in our cult hero pantheon for this podcast. Just love him as a performer. Love the casting. What I really love, though, and what I really admired from the beginning of episode two was just the simplicity of a slightly counterintuitive choice, which is we're left at the end of this first episode in the heads of the characters we've known, Falcon and Winter Soldier, who are like, F this guy. This is a disaster. And then episode two begins by letting us meet him. And he seems pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty decent, you know? And I like that. I just thought that was a great choice and made him a more compelling character for the show and whatever else he has to do going forward. So I really enjoy that dynamic. I wonder, in the same way that I wonder if there's simply enough room, and I could be very happily proved wrong about this, but if there's just enough room for all of it, because as someone who knows the character and knows the comic books, the moment when he kind of loses it, you know, and the guy spits at him and that thing, like that is, of course, foreshadowing perhaps some instability or anger issues or, you know, some lack of
Yeah, he's worthiness. Also got that loose juice, right? Because he's probably also take. I mean, I'm speculating, but hasn't he probably also taken the serum?
Well, that was my next question. So basically, I'm in a state of, like I am with the show, with this character, where I like so much of it and they're making really good choices, but I'm unsure. And mm-hmm. we can't say yet, which is probably a boon, ultimately, and one of the reasons why they're so smart to release these things weekly.
Oh my God, can you imagine if this was a binge and you were just like, wait, what the fuck just happened? Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't work for anybody. I guess my question is, how, like, Chris, imagine you were in prison getting swole, right? And you're 10 years younger.
Like I told you, it's not on my agenda.
But what if it happened?
Okay.
And then they were like, Chris, we've had a change of administration in Washington, D.C. The political winds have shifted. You are no longer under arrest for being too good of a podcaster. You are the new Captain America.
Okay, yes.
And you were like, bet, that's great. I'm so physically fit now that I can do this. And then they were like, here's the shield. Would you immediately be like, thank you? Not only is this a powerful symbol and a great defense, my years of, you know, CrossFit
and discus training
in prison
yeah.
have put me in a position where throwing this 300-pound hunk of unbreakable metal and having it returned to me like a boomerang in the outback is no big deal.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, what I feel like, even when they said, like, John Walker, special ops Navy SEAL hero, you are Captain America, it would take 3 years minimum.
I don't even know how you train for something like that.
It's what I'm saying.
Are there a bunch of Captain America wannabes walking around with no right hand because they were like, they mishandled the shield?
Also, you have to be Captain America. You have to be wild reckless with the thing that defines you as Captain America. You have to literally constantly be getting rid of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Not even Thor throws his hammer
that
much.
You have more anxiety about losing it.
Well,
like you misplaced
immediately.
It. Right.
When they have the convoy battle, this is the same version of me that, like, you know, when I played Grand Theft Auto, just like talked nicely to people and drove the speed limit. Like I was mostly worried that he was going to lose the shield without question. And I was also thinking, bringing it all the way back to family, was rereading my favorite book of my childhood with my daughter, Dallaire's Book of Greek Myths. And one detail that I did not remember. A lot of people know the Perseus story. Maybe they saw Clash of the Titans or whatever. They know Medusa. They know the hits, right? But what mm-hmm. they don't know is that Perseus's birth, there was this prophecy that his grandfather was told that, like, your grandson is gonna kill your ass. And he was like, oh no, I better put my wife and son in a chest. Yeah, and put you out to sea. And then he came back to take over the kingdom. And grandfather was like, oh shit. And like, here, you be king, I'm gonna leave. So you never have to kill me and we'll be fine. And Perseus was like, okay, I'm king now. And he was a great king, but he was also a super fit, swole king, right? And so while being king, he's also like entering various, like not even Olympic games, like pro-ams around
just
Greece.
Like fight clubs?
Just basically just being an athlete also.
Sure.
And apparently at one of these, they were like, King Perseus, like you're the best at throwing the discus. And he was like, cool, I am. And he picked up the discus and he threw it, but he did a bad throw and it killed an old man in the crowd who was just trying to enjoy his afternoon. Yes.
Yes. So, the
first
Greeks.
Of all, dead Acrisius. Perseus was so bummed he never went home again. But Perseus, by the way, spoiler alert, then was just like, I can't go back to Argos. I'll just build a new kingdom and walled city
those
and
guys
rule that
were so
shit.
Inventive like
and
they
industrious.
Would act like they had a tragedy and then all but they were like I have to marry these other 17 women.
But my point is Perseus, say he was Captain Greece, even he had a bad throw.
Yeah.
So
hey, I don't know, man, you read the comics, like does John Walker ever have, you know, like a Donovan McNabb-esque throw on third down with this thing?
He was tired, he was winded. Chris, you brought it up, though, and this was the question I was going to ask you over text, and it didn't involve a 3-minute detour into Greek mythology. Is he juiced? Is he on the juice?
Yes.
Or any kind of juice?
Yes.
Have we seen that?
No, but I don't, like, how can you have the same powers as those guys unless
That's
you're
what
on
I was wondering.
It? Right.
I thought he wasn't. I thought
no,
they were just like
Bo
the new
Jackson.
Captain America.
Yeah, he's just like very clearly like a super soldier. And like,
I thought,
we're finding out that there's so much nefarious shit going on in the background with guys getting tested.
So basically they found out, basically what they did, the US government in the MCU looked at the history of the Tour de France. And for years they were like,
yes.
Why can't Americans win this bike race? And they were like, oh, if we swap our entire blood flow with plastic bags of fresh blood every night, we
yeah.
can win the Tour de France. And then as soon as they're like, no, we only want the same blood you came in with, they're like, well, Americans can't do this anymore.
Right.
So they didn't try to float a clean game post-roid era home run hitter. They didn't. They clearly are juicing something.
I don't think so. I don't think this is a guy who like came out and hit 20. Remember when people used to hit 26 home runs and it was like, yes. God damn, that guy mashes.
You remember when Brady Anderson was just like, I am a workaday. Sorry, Mallory Rubin, cover your ears. Like, I am a workaday player. That he shows up 1 year, 2 inches taller and fully bald, and it's like 60 home runs, and everyone is like, what a success story.
See, hard work pays off.
That's like, see, kids, eat your Wheaties. You too could be Captain America. Okay, so I appreciate this because I was really hung up on the fact, not that he was like a tough fighter, because I believe that anyone, look at Sharon Carter in Exile, can become a deadly MMA challenger.
This is why I was bummed out he didn't go to Madripoor, because you know he would be up in the club telling people like, yeah, you know, I work out a lot. today was arm day. So it's cool. It's cool. It's pretty cool shield. Happy to show you. I'll throw it if you want to see. John Walker, yeah.
I just want to know, and maybe we'll get a chance to see this through the course of the series, but like, I want to know what your Mendoza line caliber Marvel athlete can do with the shield. Okay. So if Sharon Carter picks up the shield, what are the limits of her ability with it? And what would happen if she tried to throw it?
I don't know. It depends on how much whiskey she's had.
Or Sam. Sam is not juiced or superpowered, right? He just has wings and he's kind of a tough guy. And they were giving it to him.
And Bucky is juiced, though. And he also has the metal arm.
Bucky has the Novavax, right?
See, like,
Bucky has
funny,
the super soldier serum that Putin invented before we even got the mRNA.
I understand Bucky's lived for a very long time, and that's right. Part of the deal. But it would be funny if Bucky was like a Death Cab for Cutie fan, but had the arm. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, he was just like a super normal, just run-of-the-mill guy, but also was like, I have a vibranium arm, so,
right.
You know. I pitch for the Mariners.
I feel like my vibranium arm is a legit Ben Gibbard side project.
Probably.
Like, that's fine. Okay, so this is good, though. I feel like this is a very healthy conversation.
We arrived in a good place.
I'm trying to just calibrate. I want to know where each of these people are, because it's getting messy now. And pretty soon you start adding mutants to this. And I just kind of want to know what the baseline is, because what I tune into these shows for is just a strict documentarian's version of reality and a fidelity to facts.
So we went through this with Wanda, where it was like, is Mephisto coming, right? Am I pronouncing his name wrong?
Well, I've always said Mephisto, but I've established a precedent of letting you say it that way.
Mephisto.
Yeah, that's
Mephisto
fine.
Mephisto is actually going to win Top Chef this season.
I think that is very likely.
M'Fisto.
Let me tell you, give you myself on a plate, my life in hell as the devil.
Do you care about Power Broker? Do I need to start doing deep dives? No, okay.
I mean, and I say this not to be dismissive. From my perspective, it is sometimes there are two different strains of upcycling from the comic books. One is like crucial stuff that, you know, storylines that it'd be good to familiarize yourself with. Like I was saying about the Truth storyline about Isaiah Bradley, that they're using that as canon and it's interesting of its own right. There are other things where it's just like stray nuggets, stray ideas that they can recalibrate to use for this purpose. And that's my sense. I could be wrong, but that's my sense about what this is.
Okay. I think we've arrived at a great place, both with our relationship and this podcast and Falcon and Winter Soldier. So why don't we wrap it up there? We'll be back on Friday. We have a special guest joining us for Friday's podcast, which is our Top Chef recap show, but we'll also throw in some extra stuff. And just as like a bit of housekeeping, I know we're doing this at like the 53rd minute mark, but we will be covering Falcon and Winter Soldier through its run, but I think we'll also really be dedicating a lot of Monday's show to Mare of Easttown once it airs towards the end of April, which I guess would be actually right when Falcon and Winter Soldier is ending.
I think so, but we're also, but Kate Winslet is our superhero.
That's right. All right, Andy, I'll see you Friday.
Great. Great job, Bransky. I almost said have a good weekend. The horse thing really rattled me.
Kyle, I want to know if Kyle will ever come back on the Zoom.